Hey, Mel.
Oh, hey, Saeed.
How are you?
Oh, my God. This is crazy.
I know. Another episode.
Another episode. We just keep coming back with these blockbuster episodes.
They're asking for it.
And we're delivering.
The numbers went up, right, Kayla? Numbers went up. Thumbs up. Yeah. See, numbers doubled last week. That's what I'm talking about.
That's what I'm talking about.
Just growing like a rock band in the 90s.
Okay.
We're growing like Nirvana out of Seattle. Like a grunge. That's what I'm talking about. Up 52% in the streets.
All right. Well, I'm so glad that you were able to practice your type five.
As you can tell, I'm a fan of Nirvana. My type five. Welcome to Two Writers.
Talking shit.
I'm Saeed.
And I'm Melanie.
Yes.
We'll be your hosts on this journey. We have an exceptional guest today. Yeah. She's in extremely high demand. She is, I'll say it, a perfect person.
I agree.
10 out of 10, no notes. Now, you know her, you love her. For many years, she was an executive at the Warner Brothers Television Workshop.
Yeah.
Please welcome to the pod, Ellie Lockman.
Yeah!
Thanks, guys.
Oh, my God. We can't even believe we got you to be on this pod.
Oh, that's so silly.
Well, of course, it's the truth.
I was completely blown away and honored that you even asked me.
Oh my God. Well, so Saeed and I both know Ellie from two different avenues life.
Yeah.
And this is kind of fun. So Rebecca Windsor, she heard my first TV pitch ever did.
This is news to me.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Back when she was at Stage 13 RIP. So it was Chris Mack, Rebecca Windsor, Christine Davila. I had never done a TV pitch ever. I mean, the TV, it was like, they were 10 minute. This was like when short form content was a thing.
Oh, mm-hmm. Like 10 minute episodes.
Exactly. 10 minute episodes.
Okay.
They're called 10 by 10s.
Nice.
So I had never done a TV pitch before. I went in there. I pitched them. They were like, we want to buy this and make the show with you. So, but it really, it set me up for failure, because if you do one pitch and then the people are like,
the first one,
amazing, we'll buy it. You know, you get this mindset of like, oh, this is going to be so easy.
Uh-huh.
Here I am 100 pitches later.
Listen, it's a hard game.
Yeah, but you know what? Okay.
Please.
Yeah, I love running. I got really into distance running during the pandemic. I'm going to use a running analogy that I really like that is totally true here, which is that your best run is your benchmark. That is what you're capable of.
Mm.
Your bad runs, your bad days, your bad months, those are the flukes. The good one isn't the fluke.
Mm.
So you selling a show is not the fluke. That's what you're capable of. That's the benchmark.
Mm.
The rest is just noise. The rest is like, ugh.
Preach. I got another analogy.
Oh my God.
This is Las Vegas analogy.
Oh.
I went to Las Vegas with my family one very hot summer for a family reunion. I don't know why we're in Vegas for family reunion.
Too
Nobody's
hot.
Outside.
No.
Because it's 150 degrees.
No place for children.
But inside, I found a dollar machine.
Oh.
Never gambled in my life. What did I do?
You got a dollar.
I put $5 in there.
$5?
Five pulls.
Saeed.
I grabbed a bucket. That's how much was coming out. Like, I was like, oh my God, this is so easy. I lost that in an hour. It was about $800.
What?
Yeah.
You could make that much from a dollar machine?
Yes.
Ouch.
Yes.
Wow.
I hit.
Should I try gambling?
No.
Okay.
There's the takeaway.
The takeaway is sometimes, you know, the first time you get it.
Yeah.
And that's tight though, because you probably had no pressure. Like, you
exactly.
Probably just win it.
That's a big one. That's a really big one. It's the same thing with auditions. It's the same thing with meetings. It's like the day that you're relaxed and you're not, you don't have a bunch of noise in your head and other stories, other people's stories, your own successes and failures. It's so much easier.
Yeah. No, and I had nothing to compare to. And wait, something just came back to me that from that day. So essentially what the story was at that time, and it evolved a lot. And then it evolved into like a half hour show that I sold to HBO Max. Again, pitched it once, sold it to HBO. So it was very like unrealistic. It's crazy that the show never got made. Anyways, that's really a story for off the pod. But
no comment.
Most don't though. That's the thing.
That's the
most
thing.
Shows don't get made.
Most shows don't get made. That's the truth of it.
So go ahead.
But so after I finished that first pitch at Stage 13 for Chris and Rebecca and Christine, I can't remember if it was Chris or Rebecca. They turned to me and they were like, Melanie, of all the shocking things you've said to us, of which there's been many today, they were like, the most shocking thing you've said is that, like, you're a Christian. And I was like, that was kind of like the premise of, like, the show. It's about, like, a promiscuous Christian.
Amazing.
And I know. I'm like, the people want to see Christians fucking. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? Yeah. That is what time has told us time and time again.
Well, I certainly hope you haven't given up on the idea, because I'm giving you eyes right now. Because I don't know. Maybe in a couple of months.
Listen. Okay. Well, that's another conversation to go off pod. But they were so shocked. And then I think Rebecca was like, but you're not a born again Christian. Right. And I was like, oh, girl, I've been dunked and I've been brought back to life. They were like, okay, I guess we have to buy your show. Anyways. So then when our dear friend Saeed was auditioning for the TV Writers Workshop.
Yes. So this is the very interesting thing. Warner. And I love y'all for this, because Rebecca and you, I had entered Warner Brothers with, I think it was an Insecure mm-hmm. script. It was called Sugar Mama. It was like, what if Issa Rae fell in love with this artist, but found out this painter had a sugar mama and just flipping the sugar daddy thing on his head.
It's a great script.
It was great. No, yeah. And what's crazy is I remember I gave it to you. You gave me some tight notes. You know what I'm saying? And we all were a part of it. But Warner Brothers was the first fellowship that I placed at all. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I think I had entered CBS, NBC, Disney, HBO. It was like, no. And then I remember I got that email where it was like, you advanced to the next round. I was like, oh, holy shit. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you get the Warner Brothers thing and you're like, oh shit. So I definitely feel like that was an amazing experience for me, because it was the first time. And then I made it to the finals. I didn't get in. But that whole experience helped me for later. And at the same time, one thing I'll never forget is y'all said that y'all are fans of my work, which was like meant even more than damn near getting in, because as an upcoming writer at that time, you don't hear that. Like, you're just entering contests and fail. Like, you know what I'm saying? And so when y'all hit back and you're like, look, I'm fans of your work, that shit really put a battery in my back for the next year, which I appreciate.
That makes me so happy. Come on. Oh, and it was true. We don't say that if we don't mean it.
I appreciate it. That was dope. Yeah. So, yeah.
And then, Ellie, I don't know if you remember this, but Shelly, friend of the pod, cheerleader of the pod, she sent a very nice, like, endorsement letter of Saeed to you.
She did. Yeah. But I feel like it's worth mentioning the flagging that I got from Shelly, and also actually from Corinne, Corinne Brinkhoff. Came to me after we had already identified your work as exceptional.
See, that's what I'm talking about. See? That worked. See, they knew me.
Yeah, they already knew.
That's what's up.
Okay.
That shit helped. Yeah. I'm not going to lie. Yeah. And even going that far, statistic-wise, like, because sometimes I kind of look at it like sports. You were talking about running. I look at this whole thing as like sports. Just statistic-wise, it was like Warner Brothers, final. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, all that shit does matter. Mm-hmm. And influences the next opportunity. Mm-hmm. So,
100%.
Yeah. Well, 100%. You want to talk statistics, not that I want to preempt a question that you guys might ask, but like, even just getting to the round of we're inviting you to submit a piece of original material, in the year you applied, and in a standard year at the workshop, we would get between 3,500 and 4,000 applicants. And then we'd invite maybe 70 or 80 to submit a piece of original material. And then the interviews is like 20 people.
That's what I'm saying.
That's crazy. Yeah. So, that is actually one of our questions. So
God I didn't know that at the time. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I was just like, oh, great, I made it.
So you're saying from 35 to 4,500 applicants, there's 20 people are going to be chosen.
Uh-uh. Eight.
Eight people are going to be chosen?
I did the math. I think it's like 0.002% or something, or 0.02%.
Yeah. And that's between comedy and drama.
That's both.
Right. Yeah. So that's together. So it's like, it's not,
eight people. Yeah. So few.
No, I mean, listen, it's hard to get into those programs.
When there's all the scripts come in the beginning.
Yeah.
Who reads those 4,000 scripts?
So Rebecca and I read start reading immediately.
And you yourself are reading these scripts.
Yes.
First pass.
Listen, it is impossible in a short period of time for two people to read almost 4,000 scripts. So we have a team of, it's usually four or five readers. So it's still a lot of reading for each person. And they're people that we know, that the workshop knows, the studio knows, that Rebecca's worked with for years. Some of them were people that she used to work with at the Sundance Labs, because that's where she came to Warner Brothers from. And so they're really our tried and true filter for the spec process, but at the same time that they are all having those 4,000 scripts divvied up amongst them and they are reading them, we are reading as quickly as possible. So we, during that period where the readers are culling through them, we are also reading probably somewhere in the ballpark of like 400 maybe. And with that, Rebecca and I always both give everything a read, unless something within the first five pages is just not technically up to snuff and we know it's not going to work for them this year. We are giving everything to read so that we can discuss it.
So if in the first five pages, it's just trash, it's just absolute garbage, you're not going to continue reading. But for everything else, do you read the full thing?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Everybody, every program works a little bit differently. Every single studio has a different system for it. I always felt like that extra 20 minutes is going to be, if I've gotten halfway through it and it's not, you know, so far off the mark that it's not even worth tracking for the future, I always want to finish it, because we keep very detailed notes, or we always kept very detailed notes. And this person might be someone who applies next year. And if their script is spectacular, I want to be able to go back and go, huh, what did I think of their script the previous year? So, you know, it's like.
So y'all do keep track.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Like that's one of the mysteries that we always would wonder. Cause I know, like, and it's another thing for writers out there. Like, I know y'all think like, I want to just enter the same shit. Like, it's funny. Cause I almost, matter of fact, the Insecure came because I think the year before I entered Warner Brothers within Atlanta. And I remember being like, I was like, I can't be lazy. Like, I remember being like, I'm gonna just submit Atlanta again. And then I remember I was telling you, I was like, I'm gonna write it. I'm not gonna be lazy. I'm gonna write a new script. And that Insecure actually was the one that opened up everything. So writers out there that do keep track, number one, and two, don't be lazy. Like, you should be writing a new fucking spec. And I still use those specs to this day. Like that Atlanta and that Insecure, I still, my reps double up. So like, if it's a showrunner or something, there's some showrunners wanna see a spec, you know what I'm saying? So I double up. Like, it's like, yeah, send my Insecure and flip, or send this. So
And it's worth saying that this was true at, I'm glad you wrote a new one, because actually at WB this was true, and I think it's true at some of the other programs. You actually can't submit the same spec. You know, the idea being, we want to see you grow as a writer. And if you're investing in your craft, you should keep the muscle moving, is the theory behind it. So,
I mean, if you can't, you should be writing one spec a year, damn near. I mean, especially in the beginning. Like, I definitely feel like.
It's a lot of specs. Yeah. Okay, Ellie, let's start at the beginning. Tell us your path to the Warner Brothers Writers Workshop.
I was born in New Jersey.
Oh my God.
I'm kidding.
Part of New Jersey.
No, actually, I was born in Manhattan. But
grew up in New Jersey. Oh, excuse me.
I know. I'm City a fancy girl. Baby.
Yeah.
Okay. I fuck with New York.
Yeah.
No,
that.
I can't claim it. I'm a Jersey girl. Yes. So we talking career, like.
Yeah, sure.
Great.
I mean, you could start at the hospital if you like.
No, we don't have time for that.
Okay.
We don't have time
for that. What time?
Yeah. Do you know, I text my mom that question every year.
No, I recently found out. I recently found out because I had...
What time are you
on? I had to apply.
Oh, human design?
I had to apply to get my passport. I know. It's been a while since... Okay. I'm a little late.
It's all right.
In the passport game.
It happens.
But I had to get a birth certificate. So, yeah, I think I was born at like 6 a.m. or some shit in San Francisco.
Early. Oh,
yeah, you're ready.
I was an early baby.
Yeah.
Yeah. On my mom's, the day after my mom's birthday.
Oh my God. Aww. You're so back to back?
I was her gift.
Yeah. There you go. There you go. There you go.
Happy birthday, mom.
Happy birthday. Love, Jesus.
I'm coming out.
Yeah. Oh my God. The gift that keeps on giving.
Yes.
Honestly. Were you a morning baby, Ellie?
I think I was an evening baby.
Oh my God.
I don't know what that means.
Oh my God.
There's stuff with star charts you can look up. Yeah. I get a little bit interested in that every year around my birthday, and then I don't and then I forget. Mm. I don't look it up. Mm. I want someone else to explain it to me. Yeah. Someone who knows a lot about star signs to just do that whole thing and then tell me who
that.
I am.
They got apps for that.
Tell her about it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get into the whole app situation, but they do have an app where you can like put all your stuff in and it'll like fill it all out for you.
Oh. All right. We're going to talk about that
I'll
later.
I'll let you know.
Put a pin in that.
Yeah.
Let's see. I came to Warner Brothers basically through a pretty varied, partly freelance career. Mm. I didn't come to LA straight out of school. I, like many, many creative people in this industry, thought I was going to do something else. Mm-hmm. I started out as an actor.
Nice. Yeah,
graduated from school, got an agent, got a couple jobs, booked those tiny parts on like cop shows where mm-hmm. you're the girlfriend of the dead guy and you're screaming and then you're interviewed and you're like, I don't think he was on drugs. But maybe.
That was good. I believe that.
Oh my God.
But I was working and I hated it.
Yeah.
I hated it. And I thought most of being an actor is being unemployed. So this is a good sign that I should probably move on. And I got a job on a movie, fell absolutely in love with it. I had also done film in school. And so I knew I loved that. And I knew I loved sort of the nuts and bolts, like contractory type work of producing stuff creatively. Mm-hmm. But, you know, right out of school, you have no idea what that means or what that looks like. So eventually I worked in film festivals for a while, saved up money, did a stint in Minneapolis. That's a different podcast. Mm. And then moved to LA, got a job as an assistant to a manager like you do. Mm. Did that for a few years and then got to produce a short form series, digital series for Lionsgate that was trying to do basically sort of the Sony Crackle thing at the time.
Nice.
They created something called Lionsgate, Comic-Con HQ.
Yeah.
They partnered with Comic-Con. And we did a show that was sort of like Curb Your Enthusiasm, but for the supernatural fan convention circuit. It was called Kings of Con.
Okay.
Oh,
okay.
Specific.
Almost the most fun I've ever had on any job. through that, I got to know the cast of Supernatural pretty well and the execs involved at Warner Brothers. I moved... At that point, I think I thought I wanted to be a line producer,
okay,
which was the track I was on for about a couple of years after that. And, you know, realized fairly quickly that I love line producing. Don't get me wrong. Like the sort of the creative process of problem solving and having to be the practical, pragmatic representative for the creative interests of the showrunner, the creator, whatever it is, whoever it is. I loved that. And that should have been a little bell for me because I've come back around to sort of that kind of work. Mm-hmm. But being a line producer is really tough, especially if you want to be a family, if you want to have a family, if you want to have a balanced life, it can be a really brutal sort of schedule to keep for decades and decades. Yeah. So through Susan Ochoa, who's the greatest person on the face of the earth, she's a current exec at Warner Brothers and amazing, who I had known through the Kings of Con thing. She told me about the workshop, which I had never heard of, actually. Met with Rebecca, having no idea what it was. That's I looked it up, but had a long conversation with her and just thought, oh my God, like not only is this incredible and I didn't know it existed, but it could be for me just personally a masterclass in a side of the business that I have had less contact with.
Smart.
Effectively the studio side, you know, and working directly with writers and directors instead of sort of the scrappy freelance world of producing. So really my first year at the workshop, can I say that again?
Workshop.
Can we start over?
Workshop or the workshop?
My first year at the workshop was a total masterclass for me in being a staffed writer. In, you know, I had done developing scripts before, but it was the way that you do when you're learning, like as a writer, as a producer, whatever. This was structured. This was through the studio. Mm-hmm. And I'd worked with directors before, but again, it had been scrappy. It had been freelance. And this was structured through the studio, which really speaks to what the workshop does in general, which is take that nebulous, raw creative process and say, how do you fit that successfully into the machine that is episodic television? Mm-hmm. So that's how I came to the workshop. Absolutely fell in love with it. It's the most rewarding, exciting work I've ever done.
Now y'all changing lives. I mean, we talked about this in other episodes, but I thoroughly 100% believe I would not have been staffed if it wasn't for the Nickelodeon Fellowship. And a lot of my other friends, some in the Warner Brothers, CBS, they got staffed. Like damn near all my friends that are staffed right now in the past couple of years all came from fellowships. Mm-hmm. Nothing else. Mm-hmm. Like I really believe the fellowships are the fastest way to getting staffed, period. Mm-hmm. And even some people like get in the program don't get staffed in the program, but get staffed a year later. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I'm saying? So
totally. Well, and to the earlier point we were discussing about, you know, the programs tracking writers year to year, mm-hmm. even with Warner Brothers, which, you know, I have now left, is now taking a new form. There are writers that I am connected with who applied and were either first round finalists or second round finalists or interview stage finalists who didn't make it in, and I'm still in contact with them. Yeah, I have all of their scripts.
Yeah, it's tight.
That's a very important connection for me and for them, because 100%. Who knows? I mean, in a year they could be selling me a show.
That's right.
No, 100%.
Yeah. Well, okay. So could you just walk us through that step-by-step process? Because most writers, it's like they're just sending their script off into a portal into the ethers. Then they don't ever know what's happening. So it's like, what, like, you read the script is good. What's the second step? Are you asking for a second script from them? At what point do they get an interview?
Yeah. So I will obviously speak to what the WBTV workshops were. I think I can confidently say that the program that in terms of execution and also the selection process is most similar to WBTV workshops is CBS, now Paramount, run by Carol Kirshner, who, if you do not know her, you should know her. Shout out. Is incredible.
Yeah, she's the best. She's the best.
She is absolutely an incredible human being and beyond brilliant. And I am so grateful to know her in any capacity. Likewise. She runs an incredible program. But So you have to have a spec. For Warner Brothers, it was a spec from an accepted show list. I think at CBS, it's any show that was part of the previous year's season of airing television, mm-hmm. something to that effect. If your spec advances you to the second round, we would ask for a piece of original material.
Yep.
I think this is true for CBS too, that it has to be narrative and it has to be a certain length, but there's a little flexibility in the form it can take. It doesn't have to be a pilot. That said, most people submit a pilot because mm-hmm. if you're getting to that place, if your writing is that well honed, you've been writing your own stuff and you should have been writing your own stuff. Will it disqualify you? No, but it's a good idea to be writing your own television if you want to be a television writer. So yes, submit an original piece of material. For WB, that was usually about 80 people, 80 scripts. Sometimes it was 100, 120. It really varied. We didn't have a rule about it. Rebecca and I would kind of go, well, these are the ones we love and we also love these 30. Do we think we have time to read them? Yes, great. We're inviting them, that kind of thing. We read the pieces of original material. With the originals, because it is a shorter list, we would read every single one and discuss them at length, sometimes give them a second read. You know, we had a grading system that we would work off of that was just something we came up with to help with the selection process and the narrowing down process. But it really was a system of read, 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 discuss, 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 then take a couple weeks based on what we discussed to do rereads, discuss again, give things a final look, and then make decisions about who we want to bring in for an interview. So of that list, we would bring in 20 to 30 writers for interviews. And at that point, and this is something I can definitely say for WB, I don't know if this is true at the other programs, but it was important to us that we always read blind. Mm-hmm. Now, that is obviously, it's not a science, it's not perfect, but we did not actually look at any other part of the application until we got to the interview round. Mm-hmm. Or if we were really struggling with, you know, these people and their pieces of material are all so amazing and we gotta cut three or four because mm-hmm. it's not gonna fit, because as part of our interview process, we bring in executives mm-hmm. to meet the writers as well, as Saeed knows. And so then it's a game of numbers a little bit and mm-hmm. bandwidth, because we're involving current and development. So at that point, that's when we really start looking at personal statements and who the people are, because all things being equal, we want to know, where are you coming from? What are your life experiences? What do you bring to the table? So so when we're meeting people for interviews, it's really, and Saeed knows this because we said it to him, but it is really true. If you make it to the interview stage, you are phenomenal, period. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you deserve to get into the program.
Thanks, Mel. That's nice. Thank you, Mel.
You hear that?
Did you hear that?
You're phenomenal. That's nice. Thank that's you. Nice
you
to
too,
hear that.
You too, Mel. You're phenomenal.
Well, I didn't. Okay.
But you're phenomenal.
Thank you.
Because if I made it, you made it.
It's true. It's absolutely true. That is not lip service. That's not just a thing we say to be nice. It's because at that point, the decisions are truly impossible. And it, and Rebecca said this many, many times, both to people in interviews and in podcasts, it's a game of inches. We're involving the executives. They're thinking about what's coming down the pipeline, who, you know, they might be able to most successfully staff, who they think they could be most helpful to. So sometimes we do shuffling around in the interviews. Like, there's someone Rebecca and I are just over the moon about, and we desperately want them to find a home. So we might have them come back a couple times and meet with different executives. So that is the process. Then of that, we choose eight. And it was always 6 drama writers, 2 comedy writers.
That's only what's so two hard. I ain't gonna lie. That's what's so hard.
Well, and I should say that was very unique to Warner Brothers, because we never had a huge comedy slate. Or I should say that the largest portion of our comedy slate was always Chuck Lorre. Yeah. And Chuck Lorre would staff of his own people, not from the workshop. So, but other fun fact about the percentages and like the game of inches there. Almost without fail, every single year, 60 to 70% of the applicants would be comedy.
Yeah.
So the odds for comedy are way higher than for drama.
I know. I wish I knew these stats. Like, that's something else out there that that I guess if people knew, then they would be like, you know, entering more drama type stuff.
Yeah. Well, we've had many finalists before my time and during my time where they, you know, made it to the final round once or twice as a comedy writer. And we've said, have you thought about writing drama? Like, your comedy has an edge. It's, your characters are so robust. Your story is so rich. Obviously, you can write comedy, but give drama a shot. Then they get in.
You know who did that to me was Raelle Tucker. After Nickelodeon, I got in a Mentorship Matters program, and she had read Flip, and she was like, I think you're a drama writer, which is like interesting, because, you know, I'm going through Nickelodeon as a comedy writer, and I ended up writing two drama pilots, and then my deal at Sony is in drama. They still got me doing comedy, but it's interesting that is something to think about, you know, as far as like, you might be. Because as a writer, you're just writing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I'm saying? I think that's what you should be doing in the beginning, is just writing. And then maybe somebody be like, you know what? I think you are actually a comedy writer.
Mm-hmm.
Or I think you're actually a drama writer. Mm-hmm. You know, so.
Well, and obviously, you don't have to be one or the other. None of us are that at binary. Yeah. However, I do wonder, and this may be a topic for another day, why so many people write comedy first. And I don't know if it seems like a lower barrier to entry, or it's just shorter form, or you're nodding.
I'm going to tell you straight up, it's shorter form.
Yeah.
Because it's the fear of writing an hour long, like, you know, an hour long pilot is 55 to 58 pages.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and it's funny because advice I give upcoming writers sometimes, like, write a 30 minute pilot first, just so that you can learn how to write that. And then it made it easier for you to write a drama. So like, by the time I got to write my first drama, I had written like 2 specs, 4 30 minute pilots. So I had the confidence and understanding a structure to then go to attack the drama, because I do think it is heavy to be like, it's your first script, you writing 55 pages? Good Lord. I think that's what it is. But I do hear you, though. It is something you should think about when it comes to contests, because I do feel like there are a lot of people who want to write comedy, you know.
Mm-hmm. And comedy is tough. Not because, and I don't say that with any judgment. I say it because I guess it's almost, I think, more subjective than drama, because humor is so subjective, so intensely personal. Yeah. Right. And so, like, maybe you'll get someone reading your script where that is like straight down the middle of their funny bone. That's not an expression. We're going to go with it.
I like funny bone.
Great.
Right down the middle of it?
Something?
Saeed and I say it to each other all the time.
Right down the middle.
He's always down the middle of your funny bone.
That works for me. I get it.
Right. But you might not. And that doesn't mean your writing isn't skillful and valuable, but it's a game.
It is, because I do think it's just longer. Like, have you written an hour long yet?
I love how
I'm just asking.
The way that he gestures to me.
Is this an open arm of love? This is the This is an open arm of love towards you.
It does look very
loving. Like, but you're a comedian though. So Mel is different.
I mean, Mel's a stand-up comedian. Of course I've written 1 hour, but yeah. I mean, I am one of the funniest people alive.
I agree.
It's true.
No questions asked.
I agree.
Hands down.
That's why you're here.
You know who you are. You know who you are. Don't mess with it.
That's why you're here.
So, you know, some of us, it's what else can I do but make the people laugh? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's my burden and my lot in life.
Yeah.
Now, Ellie, what makes someone a great applicant? Like, what makes someone like a really, really prime to be in the fellowship?
Yeah. So I think the answer to this question is probably going to frustrate a lot of people, but it's also just the truth.
Please.
And I'll start from the end and then explain what I'm saying. It's putting in the time. Mm. So there's this great quote by Ira Glass that you've probably heard a million times, right? But it's that explanation of, if you're a creative person, if you are an artist, you know what good art is. You know what good story is. We can all watch shows that are brilliant and mm-hmm. go, God, that's great. And I know why it's great. Mm. But being able to bridge the gap between that being in your head and being able to execute that on a piece of paper just takes time and putting in the effort. So that's where I'm starting. The explanation for how to get there is to just write. And the second piece of that I would add is, you know, I think a lot of people feel pressure, and, you know, with the changing of the industry, this may be changing and the advice may be changing, but historically, I've met so many writers who feel like they have to get a writer's assistant position or a showrunner's assistant position or a writer's PA position. They got to get in a room. They got to network. They got to meet people. All of that is great. Absolutely. But in terms of your skill as a writer and your craft, none of that's going to necessarily make you a better writer. Facts. Living a full, rich life mm. and having varied experiences, mm. You know, having adventures, investing in yourself as a creative person and putting in the time to write, that's what's going to make you a great writer, mm. right? So like, you can be in a writer's room as a writer's assistant or one of the other support staff positions, that's fantastic, but that's not the thing that's gonna make you the next creator of White Lotus or Succession or Insecure or whatever, right? Mm. It's investing in yourself as a human being and as a creative. And so, you know, there are a lot of very practical things that I'm sure everybody who listens to your podcast is familiar with about how to do that. One is, you know, obviously writing is not, it's not always going to come naturally. It's not always going to come easily. So I've heard a lot of people say that they find it useful to just carve out the time and say, I'm just going to sit and I'm going to put stuff on a page and maybe 95% of it is going to be absolute crap, but I'm going to do it anyway. Mm. And you know, write many scripts, write a spec a year, work on originals, never give up on an idea because you might come up with it in October and not crack it until 3 years later in June, but it's still your idea and it's still good. I think having a writing community, having mm. a group, having a writer's group that you can not only kind of like operate like a room together with and bounce ideas off one another, but who you can give your material to and get feedback on is fantastic, because invariably every single writer has a different, let's say, primary strength, and it, maybe structure isn't yours, but very, very organic, flowy dialogue is. And so if you have a writing partner or a friend who can help you with structure, you'll help them with dialogue, et cetera, et cetera. Bob's your uncle, everybody's happy. But so it's what makes a phenomenal applicant is someone who has clearly put in the time to figure out how to not only write skillfully, you know, understanding structure, understanding pacing and cadence and character arcs and all of that stuff that makes great television, but somebody who has figured out how to take that little voice inside that is uniquely them and put it on a piece of paper. And that is the thing that nobody can tell you how to do. It's putting in the time to figure out how to do it, right? Mm. So on the page, that's the answer. And we all know it when we see it, right?
Yeah.
Facts.
We do.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah.
No, go ahead. No. I was just going to basically say that I do believe that. And that is super interesting, because I know even for upcoming writers out there, like you said, getting a writer's group. Mel has started a writer's group during the pandemic. We were in that writer's group and it helped us through the pandemic, and we're giving each other notes. And I do feel like you do need to get a tribe, not only to get notes, but that you can vent to. Because look, it's a lot of fucking rejection. You're going to have to eat shit over mm-hmm. and over again. And one thing I learned from the music industry, I'm used to boos. I'm used to saying no. I'm used to people telling you that song sucks. So when it came time to get into this, it was like, oh, I already know. I don't care. I failed the first, you know what I mean? Like, whatever. Another rejection letter. Like, you know what I'm saying? But I knew if you put the time in, like you said, to bridge the gap between what's in your mind and what's coming across in the page, at some point it's going to come together.
It's so true. And I think the reason I feel like it's important to say and reiterate over and over is that when you're in that, right? Like when you're in any process, whether it's emotional or creative, you feel like you're going nowhere. Yep. You feel like you're just sitting in your house and working at the coffee shop and, and writing stuff that nobody sees and you don't know if it's good. But all of that is so valuable because it's what bridges that gap. Is putting in the time when it doesn't feel good, putting in the time where you don't like what's coming out, putting in the time where you're not getting good feedback and nobody is telling you you're doing the right thing. And that is, like you said, the burden and the, I forget the other word you used, but of being a creative, right? You have to love it and you have to be willing to give yourself to it.
I agree.
Wow. This is like a spiritual retreat. You know what I mean? Ellie's kind of like the Dalai Lama.
It's like a ayahuasca retreat.
Yeah. If we're
she's
lucky.
She's the shaman.
She's like the shaman. Now, Ellie, for a lot of writers, the most dreaded part of the fellowship application, I just smacked my mic.
It's shaking.
It's not the spec script. It's not the original script. It's the essay, right? And like every essay question is some form of like, how does your unique background inform your writing as a writer? Which is a horrible question. It's a horrible question.
Yeah, vomit, right? Yeah, it's like, gross.
Why would you ever ask someone that? You know what I'm saying? Like, if you hate them, like, if I hated someone, and I hate so many people, that's the question I would choose to ask them, you know?
In a room, padded room.
So... And I think that a lot of writers, they hear that question or they read it rather, and they think, oh, this is, it's fishing for trauma porn, right? But do you want to read trauma porn?
No.
Okay. So now what is the best, what's the best version of that essay? And also it's like 400 or 500 words. So it's not like a real essay, but it's longer than a paragraph.
And you better get the exact length. I saw Carol tweet about this a little while ago. She was talking about 400 words don't mean 1,000 words. Make sure, because part of it is understanding and following instructions. Like if when I'm in a room, if they give me an outline, I need to write what's in that outline. I can't just go take them to Europe out of nowhere.
Isn't that the truth?
Or write an hour long episode for a 30-minute show. It's like, this is part of proving that you know how to follow orders. So look, if it's 400 words, your shit better be 400 words, 398, 390. That's it.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that you said that, Saeed, because we actually, we have always had, at least historically, we've had a class in the workshop that is part of a sort of group writing exercise that we do. And one of the takeaways is always, you're given an outline, you have to Frankenstein the script. Don't mess with it. Don't mess with it. If the showrunner stayed up all night the night before rewriting this outline based on notes from the studio and network, and you have to turn it around in 48 hours with the rest of your room, you better do what's on the page, you know? 100%. And it's amazing how tricky that can be, because it feels like it's interpretable and it feels like, oh, well, that means this. No, no, do what's on the page. 100%. Let them tell you to add a little more. The essay. Oh my God. I totally get it. I get it. And, you know, I think some of the other programs, and it's worth mentioning that for us at Warner Brothers and for all of the other program directors, I can say this confidently, we have always been very collaborative and supportive. The last 5 years that I've been doing it, we meet and talk once a month. What's working for you? What's not working for you? What have you run into? What should we be adding that we don't have? It's very, very supportive and non-competitive. Yeah, it's really, really great. But so I do know that some of the other programs weigh the essay a little differently than we always did. But I think the principle of what it should be remains the same, which is to say, regardless of how the question is phrased, right? What we were always looking for in an essay is two things, really. One, who is this person who wrote these stories? Because we don't know you. We haven't seen you. We haven't heard your voice or met you or seen you tell a joke, or, you know, we want to know, get a sense of who you are. And then two, it's sort of like we were talking about general meetings earlier, and it's almost a separate but equally important skill for a writer who's ready to be staffed to be able to tell, be a storyteller in other ways than just a script on the page. So how can you tell us a story that gives us a sense of who you are and why you are, that that is a story that's well-crafted? It's not just a regurgitation of your resume. I went to this school and then I got this award and that was really important to me. And so then I started writing. Like, that's great, but we can see that in your resume or ask you that in the interview. We want to know, let me rephrase what you said about trauma porn. Mm. I've read plenty of essays that are about something very traumatic. Mm. That's not necessarily a wrong choice if telling that story is going to illustrate for the program directors, for the selection committee, a really, really critical piece of who you are as a human being, as a creative person in the world. If that's important, tell that story. If you're telling it for shock value so you stick out, that's going to read, you know, in those 400 words. Sometimes people tell a story about, you know, a dog they had on a walk they went on. And that's the best essay I've ever read because I go, God, I have a sense of this person, how they see the world, how they think about things, how they feel about things. And that's, that in itself is a skill. Can you tell us a story that gives us a sense of you? You know, there are very easy things. It's sometimes easier to say what not to do in an essay, which is like regurgitate your resume or right. remind us of all the times you applied and didn't get in, because we probably know and we feel pretty bad about it. So you don't have to say it in your essay. Take mm-hmm. that time to do something else. Mm-hmm. But it really is an opportunity to tell another story.
Mm. I agree. I also feel like, you know, look, it is the essay questions are the shit writers don't want to do. But like, I think after the first year I was entering fellowships and wasn't getting in, I think it was because I was kind of bullshitting the essay questions. And I remember when I started like answering the questions like earlier, like, you know what I mean? Like, and I really started honing in and trying to really make good quality answers to these questions. I think that also did help me start placing in fellowships at the same time too. And another thing is, you're right. It's like, you need to, most of these general meetings, they might have read something, they might not have. But at the end of the day, you still have to figure out how to convey yourself, talk about yourself in a way that's entertaining, because most of the time that's going to be what it is. Like, hey, I like this person. Now I'll read their script. Like, you know what I'm saying? Hey, I like this person. I could see myself in the room with them for 6 months, not going crazy. Like, you know what I'm saying? So it's mm-hmm. like, you do need to, I know you love being in final draft. No, you love being in Writer's Duet. What's the other one? Celtex, whatever. Whatever writing program you're using, you do need to learn how to talk about yourself. And I do feel like the fellowship essay questions are perfect practice for that. Because that was the first time I was like, damn, I got to talk about myself.
Mm-hmm. Now, say, do you remember like roughly what your essay was about?
I think for the longest, I was trying to hide my rap music past. Mm. Like, my manager never knew and all this type of shit. Just because I didn't want to get judged as like a rapper trying to screenwrite. Mm-hmm. But I think then I started talking about what I learned in music, how music, being a writer in music, translates to being a writer in television, talking about my past life experience and stuff like that. And not just getting in the essay being like, I grew up on TV. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
actually, yeah, that one is in 60% of essays. And you know what? Listen, my heart goes out to every single person who's ever written that in an essay, because it's true. You're not writing it just, you know, in an attempt to be unique, but it's a very common story. So what's the story that's really you?
And I got rid of that. You know what I'm saying? And then also just started talking about the program and actually look up some of the alumni. Like, I think one thing I started doing is like looking up alumni and being like, I'd like to have an opportunity to possibly meet and work with this person. Like, show that you actually are not just copying and pasting the same fucking one that you paste everywhere. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I'm saying? So
that's, as a side note, in terms of preparing for fellowship applications, that is a really great way to get good advice, is to find alumni you're interested in, find a way to contact them. I know so many alumni from all programs who during fellowship application season, they are doing Zooms constantly, helping people out, meeting people, talking about, giving them advice for applications. Like, the community is thick, and it's thick for a reason.
Yeah, I got five of them this week, actually.
Oh, nice.
No, for real.
Wow.
No,
giving back.
I mean, you have to, though.
Yeah.
Like, because I do feel like we talk about all the time, is one reason why we wanted you on here. It's like, fellowships are the key. I have to keep saying this over and over. Like, y'all really, and to tell you the truth, there's about six of them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know what I'm saying? And so really get your spec scripts honed down, get your essay questions, figure out how to talk about yourself and enter. Because if you want to be a TV writer, the only way I see that I'm doubling down on is fellowships, period.
Mm-hmm. So Ellie, so for this essay, final point on the essay.
Yes.
What you're saying is it could literally be a story about like, I was in line at the grocery store the other day, and the man behind me asked me why I'm holding a bagel. It doesn't have to be like, I'm from New Jersey.
Right.
I was born in Manhattan.
Yeah.
At the age of two, I was on stage for the very first time, and the lights hit my face, and I just knew, baby, exactly. It's showbiz. So you're saying it doesn't need to be that.
No, it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't. It's really about authenticity. And I think that, you know, to your point, Saeed, about it being a skill that you need, that is so, so true. And we actually do that in the workshop. It's something we added in the last couple or 3 years.
That's tight.
Where it ends up being the writer's favorite and least favorite thing all year, because what we do is we ask them every week to mine their life for little stories.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that Carol Kirshner talks about a lot. She has it in a workshop class that she does, which if you have a chance to take independent of her program, you should. She's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, mine your life for little anecdotes that don't have to be profoundly indicative of who you are necessarily, but a story to tell. Tell us a 3-minute story from your life at any point. And working that muscle not only helps you work the muscle of being a storyteller verbally as well as on the page, but it helps you to mine your life experience and your identity for how to talk about yourself. You know, it might take a few months of doing that before you go, oh, that's a really good story to have in my back pocket for when, in general, somebody asks me about, you know, whatever, fill in the blank thing. So it's having an arsenal of those things, but also working the muscle of going, it's very spiritual. It's very introspective. It's going, who am I? Why am I doing this? What do I care about? Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm.
Writers should be going to The Moth, which I host.
Oh, yeah.
And they can be practicing their stories there. What do you think about that, Saeed?
I think it's good. I mean, when
do
I was
you think he's come even once when I posted? Why don't you ask him?
I did improv, Saeed? Though. I did improv.
You did do improv.
I did improv at CCB. What is it? UCB?
UCB.
CCB.
CCDEF.
I did improv. It really helped, though. Like, but when I got in the room, and that's the thing that I think these fellowships are good about, too, is like putting you in situations where like you'll come out ready for when you're in the room. Like, you know what I'm saying? Which in itself is something you have to prepare for.
Okay. So totally a writer has gotten through to the interview.
Yeah.
How do they ace their interview? Is it the same thing as just like a general interview with the development exec, or is it something different?
No, I would say they're pretty similar. I mean, if you're getting to the interview stage, like I said, we know you're phenomenal on paper. We know you have the skill set. We know you have a story to tell. And, you know, I don't know exactly how the other program directors think about this part of the process, but at Warner Brothers, Rebecca and I always felt like your interview doesn't have to be perfect or polished, or you don't have to have all those anecdotes in your pocket or the ability to do a perfect general, because those are the sort of nuts and bolts skills that we work on in the workshop. We're looking for people who are brilliant on the page and will help you fill in all the rest.
Nice.
So I think the most important thing in the interview is kind of like you were just saying, Saeed, television is a team sport.
Yeah.
It's a collaborative creative process. Mm-hmm. So there have been people who came in and gave a wonderful interview, but really gave us the impression that they write in isolation, they work in isolation, they are creative in isolation. And we might love them, but it prompts us to ask questions of, have you thought about feature writing? You know, or not to presume what it is that they want, but what we're looking for is people who, no matter who you are, you can be introverted, you can be extroverted. You know, it's I don't know if anyone here has read the book Quiet, but we definitely, you know, there's a predilection to sort of prioritize in creative workspaces the extrovert. But you don't, when you're crafting a room, much like crafting a workshop selection, a workshop class, you are thinking about a balance of personalities. You don't want all the same person. So that leads me to say something I wasn't planning to say, which is don't try to be someone else in your interview.
Yeah, that's right.
Don't try to be what you think we want to see or hear. Be exactly who you are. You know, the respectful, polished, professional version.
The 1 o'clock version of yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. Not the 2 a.m. version of yourself. Yeah, but, you know,
and not
we get to that in
version.
The workshop. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We stay up till 2 a.m. We go to Timmy Nolan's. We will see that version, but we don't need to see it in the interview. Yeah. But I think, you know, I think it is good kind of like for a general to have some practice talking about yourself and your relationship to your writing. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily what we want to hear the whole time. We want to get to know you. So we always tried to create a really relaxed atmosphere. Like, what do you like? What are you doing? What are you reading? You know, like we're about to, much like if you were meeting a studio, a network exec or a showrunner, they're meeting you like we were meeting you to go, do we want to spend the next 8 months in the
trenches?
The next eight, you know what I was going to say?
Yeah, I knew what you were going to say.
The next 8 months in the trenches with you. So to that end, it only behooves you to be yourself.
One of our last questions. What are 3 things you've seen, read, or listened to lately that you love?
I thought about this and I still don't have a perfect answer. Okay, so the first thing is my total guilty pleasure.
Let's go. Bachelor?
Love is Blind.
Neither of those things, but I feel like I should be watching and liking those.
Just started watching because I saw so many people on my Instagram talking about, like, I've ignored The Bachelor for 20 years, but I finally dove in and it's cheesy and it's addicting.
Yeah, totally.
But what are you, what is your guilty pleasure?
Have you guys heard of the author Sarah J. Maas?
I have heard of her.
Okay. She's been around a while, but she's having a moment right now. So a good friend of mine got staffed on the Hulu mini room for her series that's being adapted with Ron Moore.
Oh my God.
I'm so excited. And that is the acronym is ACOTAR, A Court of Thorns and Roses. And it's a book series. It's a fantasy book series. It is lovingly known as fairy smut.
Okay.
Oh,
yeah.
Sexy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's so fun.
Mel, I know what I'm getting you on your birthday.
Oh, Mel. Mel, I have all the books. We can talk about it later. I have gotten all of my friends reading them.
What's the first book so I can get Mel to
tomorrow? First book is called The Court of Thorns and Roses.
All right, Mel, it's coming.
I can't wait.
But I'm way down the road on her books now. I've read that series. I've read a series called Crescent City. So it's very important if you're listening and you're thinking of reading these books, you must read Court of Thorns and Roses books first, then the Crescent City books. Then there's a series that she wrote before either of those called Throne of Glass.
Tight.
You know, they kind of like, they're a little bit YA fantasy, but like then not, then no, the very
edgy,
not.
The edgy version. Yeah. I'm with that though.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like the Euphoria version.
Right, exactly. Fairy Euphoria. Okay, so I'm really into that. I've been, since leaving Warner Brothers in the workshop, I have been like inhaling books because I was reading scripts for 5 years nonstop and I suddenly have time to read novels.
Which is smart because everything that is being made now is coming from books.
Exactly.
So,
it's true.
But
it's really true.
That's dope that you're diving into that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's a big one that I love.
So that's one. You got two
more. That's one. Okay. This, I haven't started it yet, but I've heard it's really good.
Okay.
And I think it's a podcast called The Witch Trials of J.K. Rowling or something like that.
Heard about that.
I've heard it's really fascinating. And I want to preface that by saying I haven't listened to it, so I don't know. But
it's on the list.
I've many years have been part of the queer community. My ex-fiance was trans. Yeah. And so that the issues around the trans community, especially what is going on right now, I can get very, very, very fired up about.
Yeah, sure.
But I always want a dialogue. Like I want to know what You know, I, like the people who struggle with that, people who are confused about it, I want to know what that conversation is so that I can have an intelligent conversation about it instead of just getting really angry and leaving the room. Yeah. So I'm going to be listening to that. I've heard it's very good.
Tight. What are you watching anything right now?
Catching up on Yellow Jackets.
Oh, man, you're the second Yellow Jacket.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm. I love it.
So good.
It's going a little lost this season. True. Very interested to see where it goes. But like,
it's an amazing pilot. Like, if any writers out there, find like Google Yellow Jackets pilot PDF. It's an amazing pilot read.
Yeah.
Everything, pretty much everything that's in the pilot is in the pilot almost. And you could just see the style and the way it's written is super dope.
Yeah. It's a great show to spec too.
Yeah. Oh, smart. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Especially the going back and forth, future, future past. Mm-hmm. I mean, Yellow Jackets pilot is one of those pilots that you're like, oh, wait, I could have write a show like that. Like, it's like Jury Duty. Like, no, you want, like, have you guys seen Jury Duty yet?
Yes.
No, I haven't.
My God.
That shit is so, that's on my list.
Yeah.
If you want to watch something that's just crazy.
It's on Freeview, so it's free.
Okay.
Actually.
Okay. I didn't even know this channel existed.
Yeah.
Somebody told me to watch Jury Duty.
Yeah.
And so, you know, last week I watched the first two episodes.
Yeah. It's again, it's like one of these shows you watch it and you think, oh, like you could do a show like that.
Yeah.
You could do anything.
You could do anything.
Anything.
That's for you, listeners.
But if it has a book, it'll be even better.
That's right.
Even easier. Yeah.
Oh, you know what? I want to say one more thing based on what you just said.
Yeah.
Talking about the spec writing process or writing your original, like what you just said about, oh, you can do that. You can do a show like that.
Mm.
That's how you should approach writing your stuff,
right?
Don't write, I mean, what's true for the interview is true for your writing too. Don't write what you think people want to read.
Mm. Yeah.
Write what you want to write.
Facts.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Period.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Now, Ellie, where can people find you online if in fact you'd like to be found, which you might not want to be found?
Yeah, I have Instagram, but it's private because I'm scared of the internet.
Yeah.
So you're not on Twitter?
I have a Twitter. I haven't used it in like probably 8 years. Yeah. But you know what I am going to do?
Yeah.
I'm going to, as soon as I know where I am next, I am going to give you my info because, you know, it's, I really, the community around the fellowships and around the workshops has, you know, grown to be really robust. They help each other. They support each other. It's a community that I'm a part of. And it's the source of all my most valuable relationships in this business and also just in my life. So it's one that I'm not going to leave. So I want to be a resource to writers who are looking to apply. You know, I probably don't have time to read everybody's spec script or talk to everybody about an interview, but once I know where I am next and I'm taking writer generals, I'll send you my info because that's going to be my job. I mean, where I'm moving into is the pod development world. So
I love it. I can't wait.
I know.
Send across.
We can't wait to be developing with you, Ellie.
We need
I can't wait to see you on the other side.
Me too.
But here's the thing. We're going to have you back on another time. We thank you, appreciate you because this is so much game. This is our first episode about the fellowships.
That's right.
Which
with an insider.
With a super insider.
Super insider.
And
we also, as writers, Ellie, we want to thank you.
Yes.
Because you make dreams come true for writers. You're a champion of writers. You're a lover of writers. And we appreciate
that. I am for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Listen, here's the other side of working at the workshops or the fellowships is that it hurts to turn people away. We don't like turning people away. We want to accept everybody.
Mm.
So, you know, to run these programs, the people you're meeting with, the people who are, you know, like the Carol Kirshners of the world, they do this work. We do this work because we love writers so much. Like, really, I love you guys a lot.
Yeah, we love
I love you. What you do. I love how you think. I love what you create for the world. So, yeah, come find me.
Oh.
She will be found.
Well, but not on Instagram because I'm scared of the internet.
No.
We'll update the listeners when the time is correct.
Yes.
Yeah. When the time is correct. Ellie, thank you so much.
Thanks, guys.
So you had
another great episode.
Another amazing episode.
What are we telling people to do right now, Mel?
get yourself online, subscribe to the podcast, tell your friends about the podcast.
Tell your friends, you know what they say, word of mouth is the best promotion.
Advertising. Yes. Marketing.
Please share us.
You can also, you can come to my live shows. Saeed loves to come to my live shows, so you might meet him there.
Hilarious. Where is your live shows at right now?
Well, people can just follow me online. All right,
at Trouble Jones.
That's right, yeah.
And enjoy the laughter.
Enjoy the laughter.
Thank you. Another episode.
Bye.
Bye. Two Writers Talking Shit is an original podcast created by Melanie Mars and Saeed Crumpler. Our producer is Kayla Guest. Our audio engineer is T. Kelly.
Listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you damn well please. All we ask is that you subscribe, rate us 5 stars, and give us a glowing review.
If you're not going to give us 5 stars or any glowing reviews, then why even log on? Save your rants for an open mic.
If you have any questions for us, and I do mean any, you can email us at twowriterstalkingshit@gmail.com. That's the number 2, and then writerstalkingshit@gmail.com.
See you next episode.
Bye.